A decade ago, Ryan Thompson was a key figure in Campbell's rise to mid-major baseball power and regular NCAA postseason participant. In the last five seasons, he's gone on to pitch in the major leagues and pitch in two World Series. After a standout junior college career in the Pacific Northwest, Ryan crossed the country to join the Fighting Camels and helped his team win 90 games over two seasons. He led the nation in ERA and was Big South Pitcher of the Year in 2013, and led the Camels to their first NCAA postseason berth in 24 years, one season later. Drafted by the Houston Astros, Ryan steadily moved up the minor league ladder, faced a serious surgery, then joined the Tampa Bay Rays and played an important role in their 2020 American League championship run. 3 years later, he was again pitching in the World Series, this time for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Through the years, Ryan has stayed in close contact with his Campbell roots, making regular visits, most recently for a baseball alumni gathering around homecoming in Buies Creek. My name is Stan Cole, class of 1987, and this is the next installment of Tales from the Creek, where we visit with people who've made this place special over the years. I'm delighted to be joined today by Ryan Thompson. Welcome to Tales from the Creek, Ryan, and thanks for taking the time to visit with us.
Thanks for having me.
Ryan, let's just start out at the beginning. Tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up in Turner, Oregon, population 2,500 or something like that.
Yeah, that surprises me that it's that many people. I really enjoyed growing up in Oregon. It was always really cool. We had all four seasons. We always had the ability to do anything. The mountains were like an hour away. You had the city, the beach, like they had the sand dunes. Everything was like an hour away. So it was a really cool place to live. A lot of other regions around the world, you don't have access to all those things. So it was a really cool place to live, but it was really hard to be a baseball player in Oregon, because really you're playing in the spring, and the spring season is when it rains the most in Oregon. So the summers are gorgeous. Like people say it rains every day in Oregon. No, the summers are incredible. Doesn't rain for about 3 months. It's awesome. But the spring is really the time where we're playing school baseball, and it's hard to get games in, and it rains every day for seems like 2 months straight. And so that was really frustrating with that, and getting out of there and kind of living in some of the other regions later in life. It's like, man, I could see why not a lot of people get recruited out of the state of Oregon, because we don't play as much baseball as everybody else.
So how did you get your start in organized sports? Was it like everybody else, little league, rec league basketball? How'd you get started?
Yeah, I was really blessed. My dad, he was a A-plus dad. Like he was superstar father. He'd, you know, take me, he would work his butt off as an electrician during the day. And then every day after work, he would take me in the backyard, he'd take me to the gym or whatever it is. And we were always working on something until the sun goes down. And so he was a big part of that. And he was always my coach and all these different things. He was the president of the Little League for a little while, stuff like that. And so that was my start. I played basketball and I played soccer a little bit. It wasn't really my thing. Played flag football a little bit. Wasn't really my thing. So it was mostly basketball and baseball. And I fell in love with both sports. Mm-hmm. But basketball was something that I was really passionate about too, but I knew my limits in basketball. And baseball, it was something where it just kind of clicked, the pitching thing for me. Just mm-hmm. always, there was just something about having the ball in my hands and mm-hmm. being in control of the game, the tempo of the game, all these things was just, that was my personality fit that role.
So were you a pitcher all along, or did it just, was it one of those things when you started out and everybody says, well, let's see what you can do on the mound. And so you've been pitching the whole time?
Pretty much. I was named after Nolan Ryan. Okay. My dad was a pitcher. He wanted me to be everything that he wasn't, when he played college baseball a little bit, but kind of his career fizzled out and stuff. So he kind of wanted me to live his dream. And so we were always kind of pursuing that together. Pitching was always a part of what I did. But, when you're a kid, you'd play other sports and other positions. And so I played some first base and shortstop and outfield and stuff, but I was actually pretty good at catcher, but everything else, I wasn't very good at hitting. I could make contact, I was a 6-4-3 double play guy about every time. I'm slow, but I didn't strike out much, but pitching was where I made a difference.
So I guess I can ask, go ahead and ask you the question. How do you really feel about the DH rule in baseball as a pitcher? Would you rather be in there getting your hacks?
No, I think it's a good thing overall. Mm-hmm. I thought it was cool to not have it because it made, I don't know, it was really cool in the World Series to have like teams from different leagues that play with different rules. Mm-hmm. And now like they play each other. And I thought that was something that was really cool and unique. And now we don't have that, which is, it's really not that big a deal. I think it's better for the game overall. It's better for the players. Like, I kind of have a different mindset now that I'm playing than I did as a fan. So as a fan, that's what I would say, right? It's like, oh man, it was cool to have the hitters hit and only on one league and stuff like that. But as a player, like now you have a DH everywhere. So like more players are getting opportunities. So now you have hitters that maybe are a little bit older or, you know, can't field their position or, you know, aren't fast enough in the field or something like that. Now they have a spot on the roster to be a all-time DH. And that's really important, for guys, to have that. And so that's really good. And, pitchers like getting hit by pitches and getting hurt that way or pulling their hamstring around in the first and stuff like that. It's better to not have to deal with that stuff. So I think overall it's a good thing that there's a universal DH.
Named for Nolan Ryan, who were some of your sports heroes growing up?
I grew up in the Northwest.
Right.
So the closest team was the Mariners. Mm-hmm. I was a huge Mariners fan. And so obviously you have Ken Griffey, but he was a little bit before my time.
Right.
Like I think his last year was probably like 2000, 2001 maybe. I can't remember. I don't feel like he was on that 2001 team. But it was around then, like the early 2000s, when I really got into baseball. Mm-hmm. And that was Edgar Martinez, Ichiro, Felix Hernandez, Kazuhiro Sasaki, J.J. Putz. So like a lot of those guys were kind of the guys that I grew up like loving. But one of the things that I always like to talk about on this is I had this game, we called it Major League Wiffle Ball, that we play in my backyard, and we just invented it. You know, it was like a kid's game when we were like 10. And we were baseball nerds. Like we loved the game and we knew every single player in the league, and we wrote them down on notebook paper. We wrote down all the rosters, all that stuff. And I think part of it was just watching baseball, but a lot of it was the video games and whatnot. But we like mastered all the mechanics of all the pitchers in the league and all the batting stances of all the hitters in the league. And when we would play a game, we would pick a team. And so we'd just like turn the page of the notebook and be like, okay, I'm the Mariners. So now lead off Ichiro. And you go out there and you hit lefty and you hit with his stance and you do all the stuff. And then whatever pitcher you are, you do that. And so it was a lot of fun to like learn all this stuff. And one of the teams that I liked to play with the most was the Diamondbacks.
How about that?
And part of it was because I would pretend to be Randy Johnson or Curt Schilling. But then when I wanted to switch pitchers, I'd bring in Bung Hung Kim and I'd start throwing submarine. And that's how I taught myself to throw sidearm submarine, which is why I'm in the major leagues right now.
Holy smokes. Kenny Milton used to tell the story. Kenny was the sidewinder pitcher and an academic All-American for Cal Kuntz back in the 80s here. And Dan Quisenberry was the guy there in Kent Tekulve. But one day, Kenny's freshman year, he was just fooling around before practice, and he and some another player were tossing underhand, you know, submarine style. And he didn't realize that Coach Kuntz, who was a very stern, serious, old school baseball guy, you know, was watching. And Kuntz walks up to Kenny, and he says, "Do you throw like that all the time?" And Kenny was so terrified that he thought that Coach Kuntz was thinking that he was messing around or fooling around in practice. He said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "Okay, good."
So Kenny had to, from doing that, he had to do that. Well, then he led the team in saves. They won the Big South Championship in 88, you know, and the rest was history just out of that. So
yeah.
I always am interested in knowing how that, because some coaches will drop you down for movement or something, but you just did it organically, I guess.
Yeah. So that's kind of how it started. But when I did it, there was, you know, there were some of those guys you mentioned, to Colby and Quisenberry and whatnot, but it wasn't very common, especially at my age. So I was like 13 when I'm messing around with this stuff. And my dad was against it. You know, that can't be good on your arm. Don't throw like that, whatever. And when I was 16, I was always a good pitcher. Like I could command the zone. I could throw a bunch of different pitches, 5-6 pitches, but I didn't really throw very hard. And nothing was like objectively amazing. I was just good getting outs. And I went to this camp trying to get recruited by Western Oregon, where my dad went, some D2, and they did the whole like video and all this stuff, and they recommended it. They're like, based on your mechanics, kind of looks like that seems a little more natural. Like, have you tried it before? I'm like, oh yeah. And so now I went home, I said, Dad, like, the school you went to is recommending I do this. He's like, all right, let's try it. And I tried it that offseason, it just clicked. I went from sophomore year, I was JV, junior year, I was breaking records. And that was the only thing I changed. It was pretty incredible.
You stand 6'6", and coming at a right-handed batter from the side, that's a little disconcerting, especially for batters who don't see that very often. When did you start messing with the slider or adding that too? Or what was that? Was that in high school? Or
yeah, that was right away. It was really interesting because I basically invented that pitch that I throw, just throwing bullpens to my dad in a warehouse that first year that we tried to mess around with it. And I can't, like, it's really hard because people like want to know, like, well, like, how are you gripping it, or how do you make it do this or that? And it was like, really the best answer I could give was I was just visualizing trying to make this ball go left. And it was like, when I would release it, I would just think about making it go left. And so the way that I would rip it and the way that it would come off my hands, like I'm just trying to pull it left. And that pitch was what got me to the big leagues. My sinker is now more my better weapon now in my career. But back then, especially when I threw really slow, like that slider, we called it like the Frisbee or the flying saucer or whatever, and it just floats. And that was easily my best pitch when I was here at Campbell. But yeah, it was just like, I just created it somehow and just ride the wave, I guess.
This is a question I think we all, you know, growing up as a kid playing in the, you know, hoops in the driveway or out back and stuff like that. And it's 3-2-1 and you're making the shot to win the championship. Did you ever say, here's Ryan Thompson pitching in the World Series?
Yeah.
I mean, wiffle ball games or whatever like that.
All the time.
Ryan, what's it like having that and then flipping that to like the first time you walked out onto the mound in the World Series? Did you have a moment, or were you just so focused that that didn't hit you there?
So I'm gonna get a little deep on you on this one.
Okay, please.
So this was one of the bigger like moments of life development for me, because I did do that when I was a kid. I visualized all of that stuff. I was a big dreamer, and all I wanted to do since I was a little kid, like I said, me and my dad, right? It was like, we're going to make it to the major leagues. And it was never likely. Like, I live in that small town in Oregon. And when I was in high school, like my last 2 years, once I went sidearm, like I was striking out 15, 16 people a game. Like, there was maybe one guy per lineup that could hit it and play. And I just was walking around like, oh yeah, every school's going to want me. I'm going to get drafted. Like, I strike out everybody and nobody wants me. I don't get any calls. And it's just kind of like, okay. So I go to my local junior college and just kind of thinking, you know, like, I'm not going to get any recognition, or maybe I'm not as good as I think I am and all this stuff. And like, that was a big learning curve for me as well, just maturing, right? And it just, every step of the way, like when I was at Chemeketa, the community college, it just seemed like career wasn't really going to sprout anything from there. And me coming to Campbell was a crazy moment in itself of me never even visiting the school and just having that stir in my heart that this was the place for me to go. And so I decided to come here, and I'm sure we'll get into this later, but Campbell really did change my life in so many ways and turned me into not only the person I am, but the athlete that I am. And Coach McCarty, I'm very in debt to that man. Mm-hmm. He saw what I could do and he made the most out of me, and the records I broke here and stuff like that, a lot of that is a testament to Coach McCarty. But everything was with the focus of what's next. And my junior year, I led the nation in ERA, didn't even get a call on draft night. Mm-hmm. So it was always this thing where it's like, okay, like I know that I'm capable of it, but it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. I'm never getting the recognition that I feel like I should. And getting drafted was a big moment. And it was like, okay, like the dream, like the dream's come true. Like I'm now a professional baseball player. It's what I've been fighting for my whole life, but it was maybe a couple moments of satisfaction. And then it was like, okay, well, this isn't the goal. Like this is just part of the goal. And so the next 5-6 years of my minor league career, it was very tunnel vision of trying to make this dream a reality. And you get to 2020 when I made my debut. You know, I've gone through a lot of personal change in that time. I became a believer in that time, in the minor leagues and stuff like that. And by the time I made my debut and I got that call and they told me that I made the team out of spring training, it was like a moment that I had been visualizing since I was 10. And I always thought I would drop to my knees and start crying. And it was just like the fulfillment of everything and everything I've sacrificed be worth it and all this stuff. And I never really felt that. And I felt kind of a coldness to me of, yeah, I earned this. Like I put in the work because I did. Like, you know, that year in COVID when everything shut down and, you know, a lot of people sat on their couch and were scared of the world. Mm-hmm. And I can't blame them for that. But for me, I was so focused on making my dreams come true. Like I was like, my mom's a PE teacher and it was midnight and everyone's asleep and I was stealing my mom's PE keys and I was going, I was working out in the gym with pitch black so the janitors and the security wouldn't see me. And I was doing all this stuff to try to make this happen.
Right.
And so when I showed up back in for the second installment of spring training, like I was better than everybody else because I worked harder than everybody else. Mm-hmm. And so they had no choice to put me on the team. And so now I'm sitting here, I'm like, yeah, I earned this. Like I deserve to be here. I earned this. And it was like a feeling that it was like really surprising that I had. I thought I would be experiencing this gratefulness, right? This like fulfillment. And I never really felt that. And I get to that first year, like I make my debut and I have a really good first season and we go all the way to the World Series. And so this is like a long way to answer your question is now I'm on the grandest stage of them all. Mm-hmm. I am now living out what I had dreamt of and I'm standing there on the field. And I remember like doing a 360 and just looking around and trying to take it all in. And the feeling I felt was, this is it. It was a really weird feeling. I thought, huh. It was like a feeling, this is it? Like, where's that feeling of fulfillment? Like, this is everything I've ever wanted. Like, where's that feeling of fulfillment? And so it was really like, it was just kind of depressing. Mm-hmm. And so World Series happens, it's over with, and I'm like, trying to process my feelings, right? Like it's just kind of weird. Like I'm feeling a lot of things I didn't expect to feel. And I remember like flying home and all the way to Oregon. And I just start crying in public. Mm-hmm. It was really weird. I just had this like emotional, like I just couldn't contain it anymore. And I'm like sobbing on this plane in front of people. And like the feeling I kept feeling was like, it was like the Lord speaking to me of come back to me, come back to me, come back to me. I kept hearing that. And it was like, I had become so ruthless and I had become so cold to chase this fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
In a place that doesn't offer fulfillment. I was expecting baseball to give me what only God gives me. And, you know, baseball, just like anything else in this world, is the cup that always runs dry. And only Jesus Christ is a cup that never runs dry. And so it was really powerful for me to have exactly what you just brought up of like, what was it like to have wanting this your whole life and then having it? And it taught me that everything of this world is like, it's like the mirage in the desert. It's like you see it in the horizon and it's like, oh, it's worth it. This is going to give me everything my soul desires. And you get there and it's just a mirage. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist. And so I think a lot of us do this in a lot of aspects of our life where we chase fulfillment in our careers. We chase fulfillment in finances or, man, once I get this, then I'll be happy. Once I get that, then I'll be happy. Once I get to this amount of money, or once I get this house, or once I get married, or once I do all these things, then I'll be happy. And it's just, it's a disaster waiting to happen because you get it and you realize, well, that didn't make me happy, but must be the next thing. And it always makes me think, and I'm getting a little long-winded, but
sure,
it makes me think of like of the book of Ecclesiastes, where Solomon's talking about how everything in this life is vanity. And it's really fascinating to me because Solomon had everything.
Right.
He had everything. Like we read about earlier in scripture about how like there's kings and queens that travel thousands of miles just to get their eyes on him. Like that's how amazing Solomon is. He's got wives and concubines and money and palaces and fame and fortune and respect and all the things that men of that time would want. And he writes a book of scripture that says it's all worthless.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's crazy. Anybody that should read that should be like, wait a second. Solomon is saying this?
Mm-hmm.
All the stuff that I want, Solomon is saying that it's worthless, that it's vain, that it's fickle, that it's like smoke escaping from your fist. It seems like it's real and you grab it and there's nothing there. Like Solomon saying all this. It's like, I felt that to a way lesser degree, but I felt that because like there's so many 10-year-old baseball kids out there that want what I have. And they think that once that they can pitch in the World Series, then their life is fulfilled. But like I can sit here and say, I've been there and it doesn't offer that.
Mm-hmm. That moment, that realization that you had followed a couple years earlier, you had like, it seems like almost every pitcher now, you underwent Tommy John surgery.
Mm-hmm.
How did your process go through coming back from injury, something that, you know, you were building, and then all of a sudden, you know, can you take us through that a little bit?
Yeah. So I became a believer around 2016,
mm-hmm.
and I had my surgery in 2018.
Right.
So I've been a believer for a decent amount of time, but I was very green in my faith, very. And it was very base level. And a lot of that is just the nature of baseball. Like we are so go, 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 go. We have no routine. We're not in the same city for very long, so it's hard to get connected with a church. It's hard to do all these things. We have baseball chapel, which is awesome, but even then, it's just like 15 minutes on a Sunday when we can fit it in. It's just really hard. It takes a lot of intentionality in this game to really just even maintain your faith. And for me in 2018, I went through a struggle of trying to figure out why my arm's hurting. I had a bunch of MRIs, a bunch of stuff, scans, whatever, and no one could really figure it out. Some doctors thought I needed surgery. Some doctors thought I didn't. And it was just one of those things where strategically it made sense with where I was at in my contract to get the surgery and just kind of figure it out later and just kind of take that risk. Because if I didn't get it and we end up needing it later, then I'm probably going to miss two seasons instead of one. And what team's going to take a chance on a guy like me, senior sign, all this stuff. So it was very strategical on like why we like push for the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
But getting that surgery was really incredible for me in my journey because now I'm, for the first time in my life that I can remember, I have a full year off of baseball. And so now I can focus on who I am as a human being,
mm-hmm.
and where I'm at in my life. And where my faith is. And I was going to church every Sunday now for the first time in my life. And I was getting connected with our chaplain. We're doing Bible studies throughout the week. And it was just a crazy year of growth. And I dropped 40 pounds. And it was just like, I really just shed all that. Like, I was like a lizard, right? Like, I just shed all the things that I needed to. And if I didn't have that, I don't think I would have ever made my debut. I never would have got to the big leagues, because it was just, I was, in a lot of ways, I never really realized, but I was a complacent individual. Like, I just, so many things, like relationships, like my diet, my just intentionality, my sleep, like so much what I just took for granted. And having that time away from the game where I wasn't so focused on getting people out, and I could like actually like process from a different vantage point of who I am and where I want to be and how I'm going to get there and think of it from a different perspective. That's what made me a Major League Baseball player. And that's what made me who I am today in my faith. If I didn't have that year, I don't know where I'd be right now.
Attention Camel fans, join the Fighting Camel Club and support our student athletes like never before. Your donations go directly to funding life-changing scholarships, helping our athletes reach their goals on and off the field. As a Fighting Camel Club member, you'll get exclusive perks like limited edition merchandise, early ticket access, and the chance to watch Campbell home games from the exclusive Fighting Camel Club end zone suite at Barker Lane Stadium, or pregame with us at our exclusive hoop room before our basketball games. Don't wait. Head to GoCamels.com and click on the Fighting Camel Club button at the top of the page to join today. We make a difference for our students when we do this together. Go Camels!
Our guest today on Tales from the Creek is former Camel All-American, now Arizona Diamondbacks pitcher Ryan Thompson. Ryan, you've mentioned your dad. You've mentioned Coach Rick McCarty here at Campbell. Who are some of the other people who've helped you along the way, whether it's in baseball or just in life in general?
That's a good question. I think all the coaches here at Campbell made a big mark on my life. Greg Goff, Justin Hare. I mean, I think when I was here, jackpot, right? Like those three coaches were my coaches. That's pretty incredible. Seeing where they're at now and what they're doing, and just seeing like Coach Marks and how it's all of the same tree. And it's just like, it's really cool stuff. Those three guys made a huge impact on my life. And you know, my time here at Campbell was instrumental in so many ways. I remember showing up here on campus and, I don't know, like I had never really pushed myself to, I don't know, to be what it took. Like I didn't really know what it took to be an athlete at this level. And, you know, playing junior college ball, it was so different. And I come here and we have the first week of conditioning and I'm barely surviving. Like I am barely surviving. I remember calling my dad every day and just being like, I don't know if I could do this. My dad's like, if you need to come home, you can come home. And it was just like, no, I'm going to make it one more day. And I'll make it one more day. Make it one more day. And then sure enough, a couple months later, it's like, I'm not the worst in conditioning anymore. I'm in the middle of the pack. And then eventually I'm maybe in the top half and stuff like that. And it's just like, I learned so many things here at Campbell of just discipline and integrity and just work ethic and just like being a good person and doing the right things. And not that I wasn't before, but it's just another level. Like you never know what you're capable of until you push yourself past what you think you're capable of. Like, I remember this moment. It was like, I think it was in like maybe January of my first year, and it was on the track and we had this pitcher's conditioning and Coach McCarty takes us out there, and we had this conditioning where it was timed and we had to run a quarter lap four times in a certain time. It was like 17 seconds or something. And then a half lap four times in 35 seconds. And then a three quarters lap in 50 something. And then a full lap in a certain amount of time. And that was probably the hardest conditioning I have ever done in my life. And I remember if we didn't make a time, we had to redo it. And so we were grinding, like barely getting the times, but we got all the times and we had one more left. And we go to do the last one and we're so gassed, like we have no chance of making it. No chance. Like it was like a full lap in a minute 20, or it was something that would be doable if we didn't do all the other laps before. And we finished this thing, like I'm like stumbling to the finish, like feel like I'm dying. And I'm like, I collapse at the end, and we're sitting there and we're all coughing and we're just like huffing and puffing. And we're like sitting there just elbows and knees scraped up from the track. And Coach McCarty comes over with the stopwatch and he like looks at it and he's looking at us and says, not even close. You guys got another one. It was supposed to be the last one.
Mm-hmm.
But, and so we're just like almost in tears, you know. And I get up to, I go to stand up to do that next lap and my legs aren't working.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to stand up and I collapse and I like face plant. And I've never had that before where my legs actually stopped working. And I'm sitting there and I'm like panicking because I like need to at least like attempt it. And I'm like slapping my legs, trying to get feeling back in. And I'm like punching my legs. And I start to get enough feeling to where I can like walk. And then I'm like walking and now I'm getting enough blood flow where I can start jogging. And then I finish the next lap. And we didn't need to make a time on the last one. It was like punishment that we made the last lap. But it was like kind of a mental unlock for me at that point where I got to the point where my legs stopped working. They completely stopped working. And then just by sheer will, I got them to work again. And that was such an unlock where anything else that I did since then, or like after that point, was like, how strong is your will? Like, you feel like you've hit a wall and that you can't go anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like something's not working. Like, figure it out. Like, willpower your way to get this done.
Mm-hmm.
And there was never really a roadblock that I felt like I've experienced that I couldn't get past. And so like, there's so many things I could tell stories for hours of how this school had helped me so much. And it introduced me to my faith and so many things that, you know, a lot of the seeds that were, watered later, but, yeah, the coaches here were very instrumental on my path. And there's so many people in ministry that have helped me. Baseball Chapel is a really cool organization and they have chaplains in every city. And I've just grown so strong with so many of these guys that, have helped me a lot as well. And my agent is, it's not a lot of people, I don't think, have this type of relationship with their agent, but I have such a strong relationship with my agent. He's one of my best friends. And a lot of his team, they're believers, which is really cool. And they've had my back through anything and everything I've been through. They care about me more as a human than they do about the paycheck and just off-season workouts and stuff like that. It's I've got a lot of people supporting me, and that's really important.
Ryan, you touched on the fact that you basically came to Campbell's sight unseen. How was it that you chose Campbell? I mean, you know, there's a lot of schools between here and there, and I know you said you were kind of overlooked along every step. What was it about Campbell that drew you here rather than, you know, walking on or going somewhere else at a different place?
I feel like it was the culture. I really wanted to play Division I.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like part of it was like a status thing. Like I felt like it was a big deal to play D1. I could say, hey, I'm a D1 athlete.
Sure.
That mattered to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then another aspect of it was I felt like that status like gave me a better shot to get drafted. So I kind of like crossed out a lot of the D2s and D3s that were calling because I had a lot of those mm-hmm. conversations, but I had maybe 4 or 5 D1s that I talked to. And really the most competitive one I talked to was Liberty, which is when I was here, our biggest rival. And some other schools. And like, I really cared about having a good pitching coach that I connected well with. I think that matters a lot. And some of the other schools, it was kind of a situation where the head coach kind of does double dips. He's the head coach, but also the pitching coach. I didn't really like that. And what set Campbell apart was that for me, which is kind of interesting that this is what set it apart, because I was so focused on baseball and all I wanted to do was get drafted. And Liberty had a better track record to that point in time of getting people drafted. They had three or four guys every draft. And Campbell, like, I think maybe one, usually not really many guys were getting drafted yet. Now we're getting guys all the time. But I felt my conversations and stuff that I had with Liberty was very business. It was, what can you do for us?
Mm-hmm.
We want you here to help us win games, and we'll return the favor by helping you get drafted. That was kind of the Liberty vibe I got. With Campbell, it was, we want you here because we care about you as a human being, and we want to make you a better person. We want to make you a better player. We want to help you in every aspect of your life. And whatever you do later in life, whether it's professional baseball or whatever, you're going to be in a better spot because of you deciding to come to Campbell. That was kind of the more so the vibe. And I really appreciated that. Like, it was a lot for me to leave home, like it is for everybody. Like, I was a junior college guy, but I still lived at home. So this was going to be my first time away, like, not just in a new city, but I'm now 3,000 miles away from family, and I don't know a single soul over here. I don't have a cousin in town, or like, I don't know anybody. So now I'm committing myself for 2 years to come to a new place, and for Campbell to be like, we have a place for you to stay, like, we will help you with this, like, all the stuff that you never need anything, or like, That was how McCarty and Coach Hare, how they were like approaching their recruiting. With Liberty, it was like, oh, I mean, you can figure out living, like, but we'll help you get drafted. And it was like just kind of an expected thing where it's like, well, if you're going to consider a Big South school, you come here because all you care about is get drafted, right? And my heart was just telling me, my heart was like really like didn't like that. It wanted to be here because, like, it felt like before I had ever stepped foot on campus, it felt like a family, and that I was being invited into the family. It wasn't like Liberty was like, we want to hire you, and Campbell's like, we want to adopt you. So that was why I wanted to come here.
Greg Goff, as everyone who's a Campbell baseball fan of the last 20 years knows, energetic, go get them kind of guy, a lot of fun to be around. It seems like most everybody from that era who either played or worked with Coach has a Greg Goff story. Do you have a good, what's your go-to Greg Goff story, Ryan?
Oh, man. Stuff I can say on the air. No, I'm kidding. Gosh, Greg Goff is so amazing. Everyone's got an opinion, and he was so like, he was so like aggressive in his approach that you either love him or you hate him. I'm a guy that loves him. I love Greg Goff, and he really did make such a big impact on my life. And, you know, I think that there was, such an aspect of playing for him. Like, I really believe this, that why we were so good is because it was like, we were always, it's like, he was like the dad that never gave you affirmation. And it was like, all you wanted to do was come home and do your chores perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Just hoping that your dad will say good job. All you wanted was to hear good job from Coach Goff. And he always like, you knew he loved you, but he knew how to get the most out of you. And like, I feel like a lot of my, like, why I was so good here was because it was just like, I don't want to let Coach Goff down. Like, I need to perform. I want that pat on the back. And he was so good at getting the most out of his players. And, you know, there's so many good stories. My favorite story was we call it the story of the Megla Goff. And we have this we had this practice. It went really well, in my opinion. And we go in into straight from practice to the gym, and we do a workout in the gym. And it was a really good workout for me. I thought it was really good. And we're like getting ready to finish our lift, and Coach Goff walks in. He's at some like workouts, but he doesn't go to every workout. So the fact that he was there was kind of weird. And so he comes in, and we're like, uh-oh. And we have this team meeting, team huddle, and he just starts going on. He starts telling us a story. He's like, last night I was watching this documentary about these two great white sharks. Said this one great white shark was in captivity, and his brother, another great white shark, his brother was in the wild. And they you know, followed these sharks in their life. And the one that was in the wild became the king of the sea. And everyone was fearful of it. And it grew big and strong and would eat what it wants and did what it wants and all of a sudden he like went on and on about this documentary. The one that was in captivity, it never grew big. It was small and it was weak and it eventually died in captivity and all this stuff. And he's sitting there and he's like, do you guys know what shark you guys were today? And I just remember like sitting there just like, I had such a good lift. And I'm just like, yeah, I was in the wild today. And he goes, you guys were in captivity like that. And I just, my eyes were like so big. He's like, I felt like today that if we were at war, I'd be running towards the opposition and all you guys would be running the other way. He's like, this isn't a country club. This is war. And my eyes were just like, what? I was in captivity. And I just remember just like walking back to my apartment, just like, what just happened? And it hit me. I was like, we had a good practice. We had a good workout. And this like speech was probably irrelevant to what we did that day. Mm-hmm. But he was making sure we didn't get comfortable. Mm-hmm. And he was making sure that we stayed focused. And he made sure that we don't, like, he was all about the little things. Like, Coach Goff used to, before practice, walk around the field, and he would, like, take a wrapper, like a gum wrapper or something, and put it on the field. And then if somebody walked by that wrapper and didn't pick it up, we'd run. Because he wanted to take pride in all the little things. Mm-hmm. And so, like, he wanted us to have awareness. And so, like, we walk on the field and there's, like, oh, there's trash on our field. That's unacceptable. I'm going to pick that up because I'm a good human and because I care. And it'd be all those little things. And so, like, we had a good practice. We had a good workout. But, like, he made an effort to make sure that we're not getting comfortable, that we show up the next day and we're going to have even better practice. We're going to do even better workout. We're going to work even harder. And sure enough, we won 49 games that year. And so it's like, when you think about that and you're just like, man, that guy's crazy. Why would he do that? Why would he say that? And it's like, my personal belief is that man's a genius. I really believe that. I think Coach Goff is a collegiate coaching genius. I really think so.
From what I understand and what I've heard from Greg in the past, his Ryan Thompson story happens late in the game of the 2014 Big South Championship game, where the Camels are comfortably in front of Winthrop 9-1. RT is already pitched in every game, I think 3 wins and a save or something like that. Every game the Camels have won after losing the first game and then coming back through the loser's bracket, and there's all that's left to do is to record the final outs. And as I'm told it, you start getting ready to go to pitch, and Coach Goff says, what are you doing? Do you recall that moment, Ryan? Tell us about that one.
Man, I actually, like, I want to give a little shout out to Joe Streckfus,
okay,
our trainer that was here when I was here. That guy kept me healthy somehow, and he was amazing. If you ever talk to Jason Williams too, like, he'll attest to that. Is Joe and Jason shared a room on the road. And so sometimes, like, I would be almost like their third roommate, and I would be just in the hotel room and Joe would be working on me for like hours, TV's running. Jason's just in there typing on his computer. So I'm going to give a shout out to Joe. But this 2014 playoffs, you know, this is really like, this story like starts at Sports Zone in 2013 when we didn't make the tournament. We were 49-10 and we are expecting to get an at-large berth and we don't get it. And that wrecked us. And I still believe to this day that that team had a shot at winning the College World Series. Mm-hmm. That team was so good. We were just so much better than we were in 2014. We didn't have any holes in that team. But anyways, 2014, it's like, we know. Like, we're good, but we know we have to win this tournament to get in. And we lose that first game, and we're just like, I remember like Coach McCarty gave us a speech after that first game of like just giving us confidence, like take it one day at a time, one game at a time. Like we've lost one game, so what? Like, still in our hands. And I remember him giving us a speech on the bus and praying over us. And we get to those next games, and there's just no, when you're in that situation, there's no thought about it. Like, you're going to do whatever it takes and you're going to pitch every game. And that's what I did. And I pitched every game going into that. And I remember pitching twice in one day, and, you know, my arm, yeah, it was hanging on by a thread. Joe was helping me through that, but my arm is hanging on by a thread. But like, I wanted it so bad, and I had sacrificed so much already that, you know, when we're in that championship game, like, I wanted to be the guy at the bottom of that dog pile, you know? And it was like, I wanted to be the guy that goes out there for my team and continues to make those sacrifices to ensure our victory. Like, I wanted to be that guy for our team. And it was a really special moment to be that guy in that moment that gets that final out and has everyone tackle me and having me at the bottom saying, "Get out, I can't breathe." I'll never forget that. You know, it was a really cool moment. And so, like, you know, usually it's like the sixth inning, I go down to the bullpen and I start getting warm to throw the eighth or ninth or whenever I'm asked. And it was championship game, and I just went down and I just did my routine. And there, I remember Coach Goff asking, like, "What you doing?" And I was like, "I'm pitching the ninth." And he's like, "Are you sure?" And I'm like, "Yes, like, I'm pitching the ninth." And he's like, "Okay." And he let me pitch the ninth. So
since then, Ryan, since you got the Campbell, 5 regular season titles, 5 tournament titles, 6 NCAA berths. You've mentioned about how, you know, the little things and the big things in the program. What's it like being in and they call it now the Campbell Brotherhood. And this year, for the first time ever, 5 Camels appeared in a major league game in the same year. What does it feel like being a part of this thing that is built? And it feels like Coach Goff and Coach Hare since have brought in the previous eras and the players. But what is it like being a part of that you really helped kickstart this momentum that we see now with Campbell baseball?
There's a lot of pride in it. We talk about it a lot. The guys that were here when the facilities weren't so great. And like, I remember when I signed to come here, we were one of the worst teams in the country. We had a 40-win season the year before I came, but I was a November sign.
Mm-hmm.
So I signed when won like 14 games or whatever it was. And being, you know, one of the many players, man, we had so many good recruiting classes right there. We had such a good group of guys that made this program something, you know, force to be reckoned with. And, you know, we take a lot of pride in coming back here and seeing how incredible it is now and seeing the new scoreboard and Jim Perry Stadium and the new clubhouse. And now you have the pavilion and you have all this stuff that we feel like that we had a part in, you know, and that we're getting, all these kids are getting drafted now out of Campbell. Recruits are coming here. People want to come here. Before, it was like we were the misfits.
Mm-hmm.
We were the people that were overlooked. Like we think about like 2013, 2014, Ben McEwen, Brent Graham, David Olson, myself, Nick Ray, Michael Felton, Elijah Trail, Matt Nadolski, John Riley, Clay Brown, like all, and there's so many more. All these guys are West Coast guys that were overlooked, that should have been picked up by somebody else, but came to Campbell because Coach Goff, McCarty, and Hare gave us a chance, gave us a spotlight to show what we can do and why we were in fact overlooked. And we took that, like we took that opportunity and ran with it. And we bet on ourselves. And, you know, it's really cool now to see that it's not like, I watched a scrimmage last night and it's not misfits out there anymore. People choose to come here. They have offers at other places and they choose to come here because this is a desirable place to be. And that's really cool to me, like how we had such a, in my opinion, such an impact on making it the way it is now.
Do you get a chance throughout the season, spring training, or at times to visit with a Zach Netto or a Cedric Mullins, even though you weren't teammates with those guys, you have a common bond. Do y'all get a chance to share and talk a little bit about that?
A little bit. It's hard with our schedules and stuff. I had breakfast with Cedric a couple of years ago. We were able to chat a little bit, and it's cool. And I actually, like, I feel like I've met Netto a few times, like when he was playing here, when I was like still coming back, but I really got a chance to talk to him last night and really catch up with him. And it's just, it's really cool because like this brotherhood that we have is not only runs deep, but like, I know that the person that I am when I left here is so much greater in so many ways than when I showed up. Like, just as a human being, I grew a lot. And like, I know that Campbell really cares about making us better human beings. And just meeting all the people that have come through since, it's like, that hasn't changed. Like, you can tell that this place has always been a place that has bred, look, we're going to be good people. And so just talking to people like Zach and Cedric and just being like, man, these are just outstanding human beings. It's really cool stuff.
Everybody sees the television. They see, the social media and the other, the highlights on MLB Network. What's the reality of being a big league ball player? The highlights, and I think you've touched on some of this as you went up and you kept looking, is this it? Is this it? But what do most people, what's your go-to about what most people don't understand, what it's like having to be to have that schedule? Yes, surely there are benefits in many ways. What are some of the things that other people don't understand?
I think it's different for everybody potentially, but, I think the pressure, the stress, the anxiety, the lack of routine, the eyes on you at all times, the inability to make a mistake without everyone knowing about it, the inability to just have an off moment. You say something you're not supposed to say, you have a reaction on camera, the whole world knows about it. There's a lot of things that just heighten your senses at all times. You leave your house and you just kind of got eyes on the back of your head. People that are, gonna say something to you or stuff like that. It's a difficult life in a lot of ways. You have a bad game and, people are messaging your mom's Instagram, like wishing bad things upon your family and stuff. It's just like, it's really... there's a lot of negativity to sports. And I think a lot of it comes with how much more the betting is growing. Mm-hmm. You ruin their parlay when you have a bad game and people take it upon themselves to, send death threats and send all these things that are just like, it's really exhausting. A lot of people don't even have social media because of these reasons. There's a darkness to it. If I have a couple bad games, like I could be uprooting my family and taking them to a new city. You know, it's just the way it is. You know, there's not a lot of stability in this game. And so there's a major like intentionality of focus. And, you know, I think a lot of people, they view it from the outside of, well, they're just playing a kid's game on TV, and that it's just, you know, cupcakes and rainbows and it's a good time. They're getting paid a lot of money and they're doing what they always wanted to do. And it's just, everything's amazing. And, I wouldn't trade it. Mm-hmm. You know, this is like, it's awesome. You know, I'm doing what I wanted to do my whole life. And if I had the opportunity to do something else, I wouldn't. I'm glad where I'm at. But, you know, this is a job. And it's one that takes a lot of mental fortitude to do it. And I think there could be, from the outside, a lot of grace that people could extend to the players, that, you know, we're not so much animals in a cage that should be performing magic tricks for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're here to entertain you, of course, but like, if we don't have time to sign autographs that day, it's not because we're a bad guy. It's because we really need to go inside and get our work done for that game. And so there really is a middle ground of like, us players, like we want to, like for me right now, like I really believe that like my talent's pretty good, but really like I've been sustained by the Lord to use this platform for certain things.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that. And so like whenever I get too consumed with the game, like I get really convicted mm-hmm. of that. And so of course, like I want this to be a platform where I use it for a lot of things and be there for fans. I catch first pitch as much as I can and meet the fans mm-hmm. and meet the season ticket holders and stuff like that. There's a lot of things that we do, a lot of community service on the road, stuff like that. But, you know, there's a day where you don't have time to sign autographs or stop in and do photos and stuff like that. And it's like, all of a sudden you're the bad guy. And, you know, it's just, people don't know. And it's just an education thing. People don't know, like, how much that we do. Like, we're not in the clubhouse, you know, just sitting there flipping through our phones for 3 hours. Like, we got routines that we have to follow, and it takes a lot to perform at that level. So there is a little bit of divide.
Brian, you mentioned being involved with your community. Tell us a little bit about Big League Impact mm-hmm. that you've been involved with, and maybe some of that and some of the other things that you would like people to know about, if you will.
Yeah, so Big League Impact is a nonprofit run by Adam Wainwright. He started it, mm-hmm. and it's really awesome how they connect with all 30 teams. And so this last year I was the player rep for the Diamondbacks. And so really how it works is Big League Impact will reach out to me and they'll say, okay, your next road trip is, let's say, Milwaukee, Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
These are your serving opportunities in Milwaukee and Cleveland. These are the days, like, would you like to do either of these? And so then I'll talk around with my teammates, figure out the one that works, and say, yes, we want to do Milwaukee. And so they have it all set up, and they come and pick us up, and we go, and we'll go to Milwaukee. And then, like, I think we did do it in Milwaukee. It was we went to like a farm, and like I kind of got in trouble with this one because one of our pitchers got like blisters because we were hoeing and raking and all this stuff. But usually we'll go to like homeless shelters and we'll like speak to them, we'll serve them lunch, we'll do basically whatever they need, but they'll give us a tour of the facilities and all that kind of stuff. But it's just like I've kind of alluded to, our life gets really monotonous in our routine.
Mm-hmm.
And we get very consumed with performing and what we're doing that day. And as believers, like, we're called to serve the community and serve those around us. And it's really hard to be in service in this game with our schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And so big impact gives us these opportunities to kind of shut our brains off for a minute and go out and, like, being a professional athlete, everything's about you all the time. So it's really hard when you're like a believer and you're supposed to be like focusing on other people because everything's always about you.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a moment to be like, okay, like I have an hour and a half where I'm just giving my all to my community. And it's so perspective altering for us to just be like, okay, like I'm centered. Like I get to come out here and like in San Diego, we walked around and passed out supplies to all the homeless and have conversations and pray with them. And it just opens our eyes to a different world, of course, but like it really centers our heart to like, there's so many people out there that there's so, I mean, it's like there's so much out there that's more important than what we're doing on that baseball field. It's really special. And so Big League Impact is, I think it's amazing what they're doing.
Finally, Ryan, can you put into words how Campbell University and this Buies Creek community have impacted your life?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of touched on it a little bit already, but they took a kid who had no idea who he was and really had no direction, and took him and shaped him and molded him and basically killed his old self and born again someone new and put me out into the world capable of accomplishing anything. And like, it's cliche to just talk about everywhere you went, it was like so amazing and this and that. I don't think anyone that would do this interview would say anything negative, but like, I really mean what I say when I talk about how much of an impact that Campbell made on my life. And I think about where I am in my faith. I'm in my second year of seminary school right now. And when I was here, I was an unbeliever. And I just remember like every day when we would pray together as a team, like I was kind of against it, but I really liked it. Like there was something about it. It was like just us having our arms around each other and like having that unity as a team. And it was like something that I like really stirred something in me. I really liked it. And I didn't know why. So I wasn't a believer. Mm-hmm. Like I wrote a paper in one of our classes here on why I thought Genesis was wrong. You know, like I wrote, like, I just like, I was trying to find ways to not accept the truth. And, you know, I left here and I remember when I graduated, Coach McCarty gave me my first Bible and put it away or whatever. And then four years later, I become a believer and I was like moving stuff out of a house and I like found that Bible and I like opened the first page and like one of the first lines is like, I doubt you'll open this now, but I pray that one day you will. And it was like, that was so powerful for me. And that's just a testament to what this school did for me, because without this school and without Coach McCarty and a lot of the people that impacted me, like probably wouldn't have opened a Bible a couple of years later, become who I am today and the impact that I'm able to create through my teammates and be our chapel rep and be someone that leads Bible studies on the road and stuff like that. And it's such a splintering effect that started here.
I'm Stan Cole, and our guest today on Tales from the Creek has been former Campbell All-American and Major League Baseball standout Ryan Thompson. Thank you, Ryan, for sharing your Tales from the Creek.
Thanks for having me.